Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway for another week, an opportunity for you to have a half hour of commentary, analysis, and perhaps even some insight into how the news media has
behaved. You tell that same joke every week.
I'm so happy I made it up, and I'm just so proud of it. You know, it's just really great.
Well, okay, one time is fine.
Thank you. We're underway, as you can tell, Judy.
It is nice to be here again.
Yes. Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady, is here. Dr. Alan Shartok, of course, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, putative host of this program. We're going to discuss Brexit, Benghazi, and Lewandowski. Not Monica, but Corey. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff to talk about here. Corey Lewandowski, by the way, you know, he's the guy who was fired, I guess, by Donald Trump, most recently fired. He is campaign manager. And CNN immediately snapped him up as an exclusive contributor and analyst. So first, what do we think about that?
Well, I would say that we don't like it. Who likes it? But on the other hand, as I've been trying to explain to you guys for years now,
with very limited success,
is that condescending?
Condescending. But go ahead.
Well, if it was an all-male panel, I wouldn't have to worry. But condescending and dismissive is not good when you have.
So why is this bad?
You're changing the subject. It's very bad because you don't understand that CNN does whatever it can to get ratings. And if you have the guy who was running the campaign and he is now your commentator, who could be better than that? So the journalists look up their noses, Rosemary and everybody else, and say, this isn't right.
They look down their noses, actually.
Down their noses, yeah, okay.
You know, it's especially troubling because Lewandowski has a non-disparagement clause with Trump. He's not supposed to say anything bad about Trump. So he essentially is a Trump stand-in on the show.
Non-disparagement.
So he's not supposed to say anything bad. So what good is he as a commentator?
Well, you know who he's bought and paid for. So you know what he's going to say when he stands up there. Anything about that he might even think in his heart that might be negative about Trump.
Where I come from in the Berkshires and in Massachusetts, there's a saying that the kids use. They say, well, I'm going to see this concert. And they'll say something like, and so don't I? And it drives everybody crazy. And so don't I. It's a construction. Don't you see?
Understood.
Okay, so they're all a bunch of, you know, I mean, you know who the Trump person is on the panel every time and who the non-Trump person is.
But at least you expect some modicum of intellectual honesty, don't you? That was a good slip.
No, I do not.
No.
I mean, the Trump person is the Trump person and will be doing and taking that. And the Hillary person is the Hillary person. I don't watch CNN for exactly that reason. It's all so predictable, don't you see?
And you also have to wonder whether or not when these people are in their public positions or when Corey Lewandowski was a campaign manager, was his end game, eventually I'm going to be on CNN, NBC, so I should be nice to these reporters or I should be slipping them some scoops. You kind of wonder whether the whole system is jinxed like that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. With the revolving door between politics and media analysis that has been really created more by cable television than it ever was before.
Yeah, you're always picking on cable television. You have your own sins to apologize for, you guys.
Well, you don't see them often on newspaper staffs. You don't see them become reporters. You don't see Pentagon spokesmen as newspaper reporters often. You see them. The real money, if you want to make a lot of money, is in cable TV news.
No, we have.
You don't make a lot of money in newspapers.
Well, see, you're right. But we have something we call the dark side, for those people who aren't familiar with it. You work for a newspaper, you make, you know, $40,000 a year. Does that sound right? About $40,000 a year.
Probably on average.
Yeah.
What's that? As a newspaper reporter?
A reporter, yeah. About 40.
Well, our reporters make about $1,000 a week.
That's like $52,000 a year.
Good work, Dr. Shartok. He's got a PhD. There we go. All right. You can
and with taxes out and everything,
you know it.
Okay.
If you're at the New York Times,
so
40, you make 50, 2 or 3 times
a year.
That.
Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, somebody comes along and picks you, knocks on your door and says, I'm going to double that salary if you come over to what we call the dark side, which is the place where people, reporters, go to be in PR,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
But Elliot Spitzer, I think, when he went over to CNN, after the great scandal and everything, he was making $1 million a year, I believe. I may be wrong.
Well, that's right. That's to Judy's point. That's where these people go, and it makes you wonder if that's what they foresee as their
career.
If it works.
Do it.
Right, his show got canceled.
Would the two of you,
yeah,
if you were in charge of CNN and you thought you had something that would make more people watch, would you say, oh no, I think this is journalistically inappropriate. I don't think I'll do this. Do you think that's what you'll do? Or do you say, hey, if I don't do this, in order to get more people, more eyeballs on the tube, what's going to happen is I'm going to get fired. So you do it.
I love hypotheticals, don't you, Rex?
Yeah. Although I would say that I'll bet you that Judy and I almost every day make decisions that are the right thing to do rather than the audience building thing to do.
Oh, we could drive traffic on our websites easy every day.
Absolutely.
But we choose not to. We could go for the lowest common denominator easily.
Well, there are
going to say that we're looking down our nose now at those who are purely.
In fact, I'm going to do that right now.
In fact, I am. And yes, here we are.
We wish this was television. But don't you think that there are newspapers that do that?
Sir.
Come on now.
And don't I? How's that saying go? And don't I? What?
And so don't we?
And so don't we? And so no. Don't we? No. Yeah, but here's an interesting
wait,
point.
You
about
know,
this.
Wait a second.
What?
Just you wait a second.
What?
You're telling me that there aren't newspapers that drive people to their website like the New York Post or others?
It's not that we don't care about it, and we do a lot of stuff to drive traffic to our website.
Yes.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I'm not saying that it's an exclusive. We don't just say, well, this is important, and therefore we're going to cover it, and that's interesting, and therefore we're not.
But we don't throw our ethics out the window.
You guys have such a pomposity quotient that is unbelievable to me.
Being ethical is not being pompous.
I believe in
being pompous. Hey, excellent. Quote that. Write that down.
Stop ganging up. It's not nice.
But listen, here's the other thing about the hiring of Corey Lewandowski by CNN. Page 6, which is this feature in the New York Post, that, by the way, does not appear on page 6. It apparently originated there, but now it's around page 12 or
whatever.
But it's still called page 6. And it reported about this, that CNN staffers felt betrayed and that they were staging, quote, CNN is facing a near internal revolt over the Corey hiring, said, listen to this attribution, ATV insider. And there is a prominent staffer who is quoted. This is, you know, typical for the New York. How do you spell that?
P-O-S-T. I never want to say that word. I'm so disgusted with them.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
we post stories to the web all the time, but that's different.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about this. This happens all the time with that newspaper, especially an unnamed CNN reporter and so on. This sort of attribution without letting anybody know who it is.
Could be the janitor.
It could
be. An insider.
Or it could be entirely what's called a piped quote. That is something that you make up entirely.
Well, that's always the suspicion, right? When you never, ever name an informant. But on the other hand, they would defend themselves by saying, we would not get these people to open their mouths if we didn't guarantee them anonymity.
But I think that it has become so much the way that newspaper operates that it leads you to just, I mean, I don't have any reason to believe what's published in that paper.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. But I want to ask you a question, and this is an honesty question. You know what the rules are.
Okay.
Lightning bolt come out of the sky, hit you in the head if you don't answer honestly. Okay.
Right.
Do you ever grant anonymity to sources?
Absolutely.
Well, there you go. It's just a matter, there's the old saying about
My mouth is wide open. I just can't. But there are rules about when you grant anonymity.
Well,
there are all sorts
change.
Of conditions. And one paper's rules may be far more flexible than another's. I mean, there are standards you have to uphold. So it has to be a really strong, compelling reason to grant anonymity. the editor has to know who the source is. It has to be something you can't find out some other way. Our paper has we need two sources to go with anonymous information.
That's the old rules. Those are the honest old rules. Yeah, well, it's a good rule.
It's a nuanced thing. You need to have a, we have guidelines for how you approach this, and I could give you a copy of them if it would be of value to you.
No. Thank you. But wait. I just want to make sure. We've been through this before, and you caught me up short the last time. I just want to make sure.
I would never say such a thing, that you were caught up short.
Short, yeah, I got it. Yeah.
Right. I can't believe you said
that. Only a tall man could condescendingly say something like that. So you had on your newspaper your editor two times before you was Harry Rosenfeld, remember?
And he, I know him well. Mm-hmm.
And he, remember the Judy Rule, which two sources, mm-hmm. and you remember All the President's Men, do you remember that? Woodrow Bernstein?
Mm-hmm.
And we always thought that, well, under that rule at the Washington Post, Harry would have known. But of course, Ben Bradley apparently knew, but not Harry, who was supervising the reporters. Am I wrong about that?
Well, Harry would tell
Turns out once we found out who it was.
Harry would tell you that the notion of, quote, the two-source rule at the Washington Post during the time that he was running the Metro desk and hired Bob Woodward and ran the Woodward and Bernstein team, he would tell you that the two-source rule has been misstated, that there was never any such thing as a concrete two-source rule, that sometimes two sources are not enough and sometimes one source is enough.
Well,
it
I'm
depends
not even talking
on the
about
quality
sources.
Of the sources.
I'm sorry, Rex. I'm not talking about sources. That's my fault.
Oh.
I'm talking about how many people at the paper knew who the confidential source was.
I don't know. At our paper, our guidelines for the use of confidential sources require that the reporter tell an editor at the paper.
An editor.
Mm-hmm, who it is, because that is, in effect, a contract, not between the reporter and the source, but between the newspaper and the source. And so when you see something that is unnamed, there's an editor who knows as well as the reporter what it is.
It's so interesting because, not that I've talked to Governor Cuomo that much, but I did at one point, and I remember him saying to me, let's keep this between ourselves.
Uh-huh.
You see? And he starts, I think, most
conversations. He starts conversation, every conversation that way,
let's
it seems
keep
to be.
Between ourselves.
And then did you say, okay? Because you have to agree to it. Before we start talking.
I probably said okay. I probably nodded or scratched my chin or something.
But by the way, a reporter for Gawker tried to replicate the reporting of Page Six in that New York tabloid and emailed more than a dozen people all around CNN, found no signs of a revolt, no organized protest about Lewandowski's hiring. But I did find, he writes, some discomfort. Some people are uncomfortable with the hiring. Might even be some awkward moments in the makeup room, but everyone also said they understood the hiring and the logic of it.
At Gawker, the makeup room is right next to the makeout room.
Is that true?
No. or an inside source, so told
CNN.
Me.
So as they say. So reporters simply need to think about the way that they go about using unnamed sources. And I think that what the point of this is that there is no indication that there is any thought given to it at some news organizations.
Yeah, it sounds like they just wanted a story, any story, about Lewandowski going to CNN. And in any newsroom, there's going to be grumbling about anything.
Uh-huh. I don't know what's going on here. Alan is walking around the studio. Oh, I see. He's unable to see the time clock. He's wandering the studio, so you can't hear him, you see, because he's away from the microphone.
How long before
he gets out of here? Free at last. Free at last, Lord. So anyway, this is the Media Project. Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith here, and we're talking to you about media issues. So I promised that we would talk alliteratively about Brexit, Benghazi, and Lewandowski. Brexit. How did the media do in covering the vote? Anybody want to talk about that?
I frankly think they did very well.
Mm-hmm.
I was up all night long reading the various dispatches. They had it pretty early. They knew pretty well what had happened early. And I'm sure there's plenty of room for people, such as yourselves, to be doubters. But I thought they did very well.
I thought they did poorly because at one moment we're talking about, this is going to be a disaster for Europe, a disaster for America. The stock markets start plunging. And I didn't think it was balanced. I didn't think they gave us a good sense of what exactly it will mean. Mm. I think the developments later in the week, after 3 or 4 days, started to get better. But I think in the first couple of days, it was a disaster. And I thought they hyped it up a bit.
Well, that's so interesting that you say that. This radio station brought on experts to talk about whether the stock market, when it was way down, would turn around. And Hugh Johnson, one of the greats of all times, came right on before these very microphones that you're now intoning into and said he thought it would turn around, give it a week, he said, and sure enough, he was right.
Mm-hmm.
So I take a little pat on the back for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not you, though?
You take a pat on the back for Hugh Johnson's wisdom. This is good.
No, for having somebody on the air who is wise.
That's good. That's true. It is good.
That's condescending now. You know what it is.
Any chance I get to look down my nose, you know, as you say.
Especially since you're tall. And you've already mentioned that I was short.
You brought it up. I did not bring up the short part. You know, I believe you said someone's being brought up short. Anyway, so Brexit, though, I think one of the interesting elements is that everybody was caught flat-footed. Nobody expected, given the polls at the end, that is P-O-L-L-S, nobody expected that it would happen. And so,
well, the P-O-L-E-S figured prominently in this because a great deal of the resentment in Great Britain was against the Poles immigrating.
Yeah.
In the follow-up coverage, we're finally getting to start talking about the issues in which why Brits were voting to leave the EU. Because there are some serious issues going on with the European Union, some fundamental issues about immigration, about sovereignty.
More about bureaucracy?
Yeah, and that was not really part of the coverage substantially in the early days of this.
Well, again, Rex's admonition to us over the years that we really don't want to talk about the media as if, you know, there was one size that fit all. I mean, there were hints of much of this that was going on. I think the bigger story, frankly, has been missed by the media.
What's
and that is, well, Rex, I'll tell you what it is.
He's going to tell us now.
I truly think that many of the people, there was a double, triple, quadruple fake out going here.
Ooh.
That many of the people who were against the EU leaving were for the EU leaving, but because they couldn't basically betray, you know, the people who had voted for them and the rest of it, and they didn't want to mess up. So, with a couple of exceptions, like a prime minister who has to resign, others, now you see that there's not a continued call for a second, a do-over. Now, interestingly, it was pretty close, you know, 5 or 6 points. You would think with voter unhappiness and everything else, you would do it again. But nobody seems to be for that, indicating, I think, that my hypothesis may be correct.
Huh.
Have you been following this, or are you drifting away somewhere else?
I'm sure that I picked up every nuance of it. Did you, Judy?
Some political shenanigans, I think, is the
political shenanigans. There we go. That's what would be the chyron with the little words around the bottom of the screen there,
Shartok says political shenanigans.
There you go.
Brexit.
Well, okay, which brings us to the other B, Benghazi. And to your point that you were just making on this other thing, and that is depending upon what media source you turn to, you would have had a completely different point of view. On Fox News, panelist said Hillary Clinton's actions were borderline criminal. Another panelist called it outrageous and disturbing behavior. And the chyron, the little roll across the bottom of the screen, said, Benghazi report faults Clinton and Obama for pushing false narrative about video. But if you were reading the Washington Post
or the Daily News in New York City,
it would say that it really wasn't a very big deal.
Well, don't you think that's true?
The Post says no new evidence of a specific wrongdoing by Hillary Clinton that doesn't fundamentally change a public's understanding about the terrorist attacks, that kind of thing. I think whether you believe the Post or Fox depends upon where you come from, what your perspective is.
Yeah, people go to the news that they think represents their point of view. I mean, I can tell you, we have two conservative commentators on WAMC who are very, you know, very strong. One is a guy by the name of London, and he takes an anti-establishment, very Republican, very right-wing position, and I get all these calls all the time. Get him off our station. I say, lady, as long as I breathe a breath, that person is staying on the station.
You know, I subscribe to a lot of newsletters, and so newsletters are a way you get breaking news quickly from different kinds of sources. And so as this report, the news about this report broke, I would get one newsletter in the subject line would indicate that it was bad for Hillary Clinton. And then I'd get another newsletter saying it was really good for Hillary Clinton. And I thought, are we talking about the same report?
Well, was it good or bad?
Both from the different media sources dependent. I mean, I subscribe to a lot of different newsletters, but they were all over the boards. And the result was the headlines that were going out from all these agencies claimed vastly different outcomes from the report.
You know, an interesting point was made by a reader who came into our afternoon meeting. You know, we sit down at 3 o'clock every day and decide what's going to be on the front page of the paper. This happens in every newsroom in the country in the afternoon. And we open it to readers sometimes. People are invited to come in and people like to participate. And one reader, as we were...
Could I come and just sort of...
No, not you.
Make myself... But it,
I mean, we have certain standards. Come on. But this very nice guy, seemingly thoughtful, was introducing himself at the outset of things. And he said, you know, I'm a fan of the Times Union. But he said, of course, after I read the left-wing coverage of the Associated Press, I then go on and read my stuff that's dependably conservative. And he cited a couple of commentators who put out these kinds of newsletters Judy's talking about, some radio host and another guy. And I wanted to say, you're comparing apples and oranges. You're comparing journalism, the journalism of verification, reporting by the AP, which I don't think is left-wing, with intentional bias, with newsletters that are designed to get across a particular point of view. And it's a remarkable thing that people don't understand the difference.
There. Well, wait a second now. Just wait a second. I'm a little bit older than both of you are. A lot older than both of you are.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be 75 years...
We're not going
to
disagree with you.
No,
I'm supposed to be 75 years younger. So.
Supposed to be.
Okay. Well, you don't know if you'll get there.
Oh, I see. You anticipate it, but never knows.
So here's the point. When I was young and in college, 59 to 63, I used to read something. I was on the list. I'm sure that's in my FBI file. I.F. Stone, Izzy Stone, would do a report.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called. I.F. Stone Weekly, it wasn't
yeah,
called?
Yeah, I.F. Stone Weekly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to say that the tenor of the Times was decidedly against what Izzy Stone had to say about the way America was being run, about the corporations, the defense budget, and everything else. And it turns out he was absolutely right. And the tenor of the whole thing was, you weren't going to read it in the New York Times. I'm sorry about that, but you were not. And there's a sort of zeitgeist of the entire media reflection of the American society. And it turns out that the very things we're talking about, these newsletters, can be right and everybody else can be wrong.
Well, it could be.
Well, I'd say something defensive. You know, defending the military-industrial complex.
You know what you're getting when you, or you should know what you're getting when you go for these. It's just that some people see them as being valid sources of information, which they may be, but you ought to understand you're not going to get the other side. You're not going to get everybody.
Right, and then and there are newsletters, and there are also email blasts from traditional news sources, too, that come via email and keep you, it's another way for us to distribute our content. So the newsletters indeed are opinion-based. They're slanted.
My point was, Judy, I'm so sorry for interrupting, but my point really was that I.F. Stone, in terms of what he was saying, was right. And the newspapers weren't covering the same stuff. So it's not a point of view. There is something in this world called right and wrong.
Right and wrong, but not in politics. In terms of point of view.
In politics.
Well, I mean, people have different points of view.
I'm going to spend a little time this weekend and check out and try to track down some of those old newsletters.
I'm only talking about one.
He's basically...
Did he have a lot of tax audits?
Basically, don't you think that Bernie Sanders is sort of Izzy Stone reincarnate?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I do.
It's just sort of
that's why
thing.
I voted for him.
So what was unacceptably to the left a generation or two ago when you were reading that, I mean, people...
Because of people like I.F. Stone is my point.
Maybe Bernie will do his own newsletter.
There you go. Well, this could happen. I mean, people actually do turn, you know, to your point about people, politicians not coming out as journalists later in print. There was a congressman from Eastern Long Island, Otis Pike, who had a great career as a columnist after he left Congress.
I remember him.
Yeah, he was an iconoclast from the representative of the Hamptons. And so there are occasionally people like that. And there are people like of course, Bill Moyers, who became a publisher of Newsday and then became the noted public broadcasting analyst.
But one last thing on Benghazi. It really turned out to be a bunch of nothing. And the Republicans, having not enough to work with, kept spewing it. And the media kept picking it up. But, you know, too bad.
Well, we'll see if it has an impact on the election. That remains to be seen, how much Americans will pay attention to it in the weeks and months ahead. So that's about all we got time for today.
Oh, no, say it isn't so.
Isn't that amazing that we're through with a half hour of commentary already?
Time indeed flies.
And so must we, off to our respective newsrooms and other responsibilities, and so must you, dear reader, dear listener, I mean, Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith here. Thanks for joining us this week on The Media Project. Now,
publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.